Malou, who's going to speak on minimal ordered transitive factorizations of permutations.
Okay, thank you. So the result I want to present is not such a very recent result, since we found it 3 or maybe even 4 years ago. But first, I think that we haven't advertised it enough. And the most stupid reason for that is the fact that I had carefully drawn, handwritten, a big bunch of slides, and my dear co-author, Gilles Schaeffer, lost the whole bunch of slides in the subway in Paris. And afterwards, none of us ever wanted to write them again. Sorry?
You didn't find it published somewhere?
No, surprisingly. And so then I think that this result fits nicely with two of the topics of the conference, which haven't been discussed very much so far, but which are branched covers of surfaces and matrix integrals or random matrices. You won't see them very much in my talk either, but believe me, they are there and not very far. I will stick to the combinatorial point of view. So first, let me define the words in the title. If we take a permutation, sigma 0 in Sn, then an m-ordered factorization of sigma 0 is just an m-tuple of permutations in the same symmetry group whose product is sigma 0. And then we shall focus on transitive factorizations, that is, the ones for which the group generated by the factors is transitive. And this is a condition which comes from the connection with the branched covers of surfaces. And in this case, well, I guess it also makes sense combinatorially. In this case, it's not very hard to see that there is a bound on the total number of cycles. C of sigma is the number of cycles of sigma of the factors. And such a transitive factorization, which will be called extremal or minimal, which may sound surprising because the total number of cycles happens to be maximal, but it is minimal if you consider the rank of the factors. So if this inequality is an equality. So we have, can you see the example? Is it too low? There's not much I can do if it is too low. But so here we have the identity on three elements, and say we are interested in finding the minimal transitive factorizations of it into m equals two factors, then this condition tells us, well, that every factor has exactly one cycle, and you get these two factorizations. So in general, we want to count them. So in yesterday's talk by Alexandru, so what he had was sigma zero had only two cycles, and he was interested in the case where m is 2. Okay. So one instance of this counting problem was studied and solved a long time ago by Hurwitz, and it is a case where you want all the factors to be transpositions. And what he proved, or almost proved, maybe I should say, is that so you take a permutation, sigma 0, and you fix its cyclic type, so it has di cycles of length I, then the number of factorizations of sigma 0 into m transpositions, but now m is some function of sigma 0, which is equivalent to the minimality condition once you have said that the factors have to be transpositions, and then you want this factorization to be transitive. Well, this number has a very nice expression, with small prime factors, and I denote it by H sigma 0 like Hurwitz. So this result was then rediscovered by Ian Goulden and David Jackson, and then proved or reproved in two other ways, whereas Volker Strehl's approach is exactly Hurwitz. But surprisingly, there is no simple direct combinatorial explanation for such a simple formula. So this is something that still has to be done. The result I want to discuss today gives the number of minimal transitive factorizations regardless of the cycle type of the factors. So we want all of them. And so in this case, so we have again this permutation sigma 0, and we count the number of factorizations that are both transitive and minimal. And again, there is a very nice formula, which you cannot see in the back row, but well, you will see it again a bit higher later. And so again, with very small prime factors. What I'm going to do is to explain combinatorially where such a formula comes from. So I denote these numbers by F sigma 0 of M, F like factorizations, of course. So before I tell you where this comes from, let's look at one example. If we take sigma 0 to have only one cycle, then we find by applying this result that the number of minimal transitive M factorizations is just, well, a number of trees, of M array trees. And this was then explained bijectively by Michel Bousquet, who is not my brother, nor cousin, nor anything, but is also working on this topic. And so in this case, here is the minimality condition. I want to mention that Golden and Jackson proved a much more refined result in the same direction, because they were able to give the number of such factorizations in which the cycle type of each of the factors is fixed. So that's much stronger, of course, and you have to resum all their numbers to get this. So, for instance, if we take a three cycle here, 1, 2, 3, that we want to factor into two factors, then the minimality condition tells you that there are four cycles in the factors. So there are two possibilities that would be counted separately in the Golden-Jackson result. So either one of the factors is the identity and the other has only one cycle, so this is trivial somehow, or each factor has exactly two cycles, that is a transposition, and you get these three factorizations. Another remark that I want to do is that, maybe surprisingly, this result that we have on the number of factorizations actually contains Hurwitz's result on the number of factorizations into transpositions. So I want to give you just the three main ingredients that explain this, and it takes a few minutes to combine them and to realize why this is true. So the first observation here is that the numbers we have obtained for factorizations are polynomials in M of a certain degree, D. Then the second observation is that from the numbers we have obtained, it's very easy to count the proper factorizations, that is the ones in which none of the factors is the identity, just by an inclusion-exclusion procedure, which gives you something like that. And then the final observation is that in a proper factorization, because of the minimality condition, forcing all factors to be transpositions, that is to have n minus 1 cycles, is equivalent to fixing exactly the number of factors to be this value d that was a degree of my polynomial. So in other words, a proper factorization into d factors has to be, if it is minimal and transitive, has to be a factorization into transpositions. Okay, so now you take this formula for proper factorizations, you apply it when M is D, and what this is doing, given that this is a polynomial in M of degree D, is just extracting the top coefficient, the dominant coefficient, up to a factorial. And so this gives us, again, Hurwitz's result. So really, the dominant coefficient in our expression is Hurwitz results. Okay, so now I want to tell you where the result comes from. And in order to do so, I will, as is often the case in these stories of permutations of and factorizations of permutations, I will relate this problem to the enumeration of certain planar maps. And to my surprise, nobody has yet said what a map is in this workshop, so let me remind you what a rooted planar map is. So it is the or one embedding of a connected planar graph in the plane. So you have an example here. So of course you have vertices of various degrees, you have edges that can be loops, or you can have multiple edges, and you have something that graphs do not have, namely faces, which are the connected components of the complement. And we focus on rooted maps, which are much easier to count, which means that one of the edges of the map is oriented in such a way the infinite face lies to the right of this edge. So that's a convenient convention. So this little note is just to tell you that a given graph can correspond to several different maps. So now the maps that will be relevant to our enumeration problem are the ones that we call M Eulerian, and they are defined as follows. So first we want them to be bicolored, bipartite and bicolored, meaning that they have black and white vertices and that every white vertex is only adjacent to black vertices and vice versa. And then we impose some degree conditions on the vertices, which are the following. All black vertices have the same degree M. So here and in all the examples, you shall see M is 3. And the white vertices have a degree that is always a multiple of M. So this one has degree 3, this one 6, and you could have 9 and 12 and so on. The reason for this terminology is the fact that when M is 2, so we have, you think of the black vertices, they have degree 2, so they are really sitting in the middle of one edge, and if you remove them, you get a map with only white vertices, each of an even degree, and that's an Eulerian map. So I want to give you the connection between these maps and the factorizations we are interested in. So I will start from such a map. And first, I will... So let's say it has exactly di white vertices of degree mi. That's the convention I will keep. Then the number of black vertices is fixed to be this. And so I will first label these black vertices from 1 to n in such a way that the root vertex is labeled 1. So, of course, there are n minus 1 factorial ways of doing this, and this will stand for the number of M Eulerian maps having this number of degrees of vertices of each degree. So then, given this labeled map, I now define canonical coloring of the faces with M colors, and in our case it will be 3 colors, by saying that I meet the colors from 1 to M in counterclockwise order around the black vertices. So you can check, for instance, this black vertex, you have 1, 2, 3 around it, this one, 1, 2, and then a face 3, and so on. And this is only possible because the white vertices have a degree that is a multiple of M. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. So now, given this labeling...
Well,
this
the outside to be colored
one. Yeah, it's one. It's here. Yeah, you're right. That's the first convention. Otherwise, it's not canonical. So from this coloring, I now get M permutations, these ones, by looking, so each permutation corresponds to one of the M colors, And to get, for instance, sigma 3, I look at the faces colored 3. So there are two such faces here and there. And I just look in clockwise order at the black vertices on this face. So for instance, for this one, I get 1, 6, 2, 7, 3, 4, 8. And this gives me this cycle. So one cycle per face. And this small face here gives me this small cycle 5. And I do this for every face. And I get certainly 3 permutations. You can observe already that given that the map is connected, this implies that the group generated by these sigma i's is transitive. Okay, and now I take the product, of course, of these 3 factors. I get a sigma 0. And if you take a few minutes or seconds, you will realize that what you are doing by multiplying these factors is, well, what you obtain is a permutation in which the cycles correspond to the white vertices of the map. And more precisely, if you take a white vertex, this one or that one, you get the corresponding cycle by looking at, well, the black vertices that are adjacent to it in clockwise order, but you only pick those which are adjacent via edge which has a face labeled 1 on its right. So that's a bit unpleasant to describe, but that's how it works. That's not hard to see. Okay, so the... Yeah. Well, it's this picture. So maybe we should... Yeah, right. Okay, so let's start, say, with... So the only really interesting vertices, white vertices, are these ones because they don't have a ridiculous degree, but they are a bit more boring because they are on the infinite face as well. So let's start to warm up with this vertex. So we look at the edges that start from this and have a face labeled 1 on the right-hand side. So where's 1? So it's this edge. So I claim that, and that's the only one, unfortunately, so this vertex gives me this cycle. So now let's take, say, this one. So I'm looking for the edges that have a 1 to their right. So there's this one. So that's 3. And I go on in clockwise order. So 1, 2, 3, and 4. So that's the next one, which has this face labeled 1 on its right. And I get 2. So that's this cycle. And this one would give that cycle of length 2. Clockwise. Yeah. Which is something you cannot realize on this picture.
Does it matter what order you multiply sigma 1, sigma 2, sigma 3?
Yes, yes. Yeah. So so I first, for instance, 3 would go to 4, and which would go to 4, and then to 2. So that's.
But these cycles will always be disjoint, right? They will.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly all
the yeah. Each black vertex only corresponds in that way to one white vertex. Okay, so the conclusion of this is that, well, given that we had exactly di white vertices of degree I, here we have di cycles of length I, which fits with our idea of factoring permutations. And it turns out that this is really a bijection between labeled maps, Eulerian maps, and pairs formed of a permutation sigma 0 having di cycles of length I and a minimal transitive factorization of it. So the transitivity, I said, it already comes from the connectivity of the map, and the minimality is just the translation of the fact that the map is planar. So if you apply Euler's characteristic formula to this map, it will exactly give you in terms of the number of cycles of the factors, the minimality condition. Okay, so these are the numbers we are interested in, and we've seen now that they are related to the number of maps. So our results can be rephrased like this. The number of maps having this degree distribution, well, has again a nice expression, which is now what we want to prove. So the way we are going to prove this using a bijection and using some kind of principle that was initiated by Gilles Schaeffer during his when he was a graduate student. And what he did in his thesis was to realize that a number of very simple formulae in map enumeration can be understood combinatorially by finding that some trees are hidden inside the corresponding maps. And this is also what we are going to do. And so the proof will go as follows. So, I mean, since then, we and others have realized that this principle of finding, discovering one family of trees inside maps works really for many, many families of planar maps. And so we are going to apply this principle. So, of course, the key step and probably the hardest step is to find which family of trees is really relevant in your map problem. And then or at the same time, one constructs a bijection between the maps and a subclass of the trees, which are usually called balanced. And then, of course, one has to count balanced trees. So you will see this principle illustrated in the case of M. Eulerian maps, but really the rough idea is that in the same way you can obtain a tree by taking a cyclic conjugacy class of a word, you know, the Rane's lemma or the cycle lemma, then in the same way it seems that maps are really cyclic conjugacy classes of trees. So, in our case, so here is the formula we want to prove, and I will really understand this part as a number of trees. And then this is somehow the conjugacy. Okay, so let me define the blossom trees, which I claim are hidden behind M. Eulerian maps. And at the same time, I will define them, I will count them, which is easy. So we start from a tree having white inner nodes, and more precisely, every such node has a degree which is 1 modulo m minus 1, and you have some leaves which are represented like this. So, well, we all know how to count trees, so this is the number of such trees. Then,
embedded trees
or? Yeah, like maps.
The order
is important.
Left to right.
Yeah. So, well, we want to transform them into a map. So, of course, we have to make this bipartite for a start. And the way we are going to do this is to add a black vertex in the middle of each inner edge to separate white vertices. And these black vertices, as in the M. Eulerian maps, they have to have degree M. So that's the second step. We add a black node of degree M. Here M is 3 on each inner edge. And the leaves attached to these black nodes, we draw them differently and we call them buds. So given that the total degree here is M, you have M minus 2 buds, which you have to arrange on both sides of the edge. And you can do this in M minus 1 ways. And so this gives you this factor, because C minus 1 can be seen to be the number of inner edges. Okay, so that's not sufficient, because we want these vertices to have a degree that is a multiple of M. And what we have so far is not sufficient. So we complete this by adding, the right number of black neighbors, that is I minus one black children, to the right nodes. And the number of ways we can do this is given by some binomial coefficient, which tells you where to put these black children in the sequence of children of a white node.
I mean, so every white node had the wrong
number.
So, but here you are fixing only some of them.
Fixing? What do you mean?
Adding
yes, I add I minus one children, but some of them were corresponding to I equals one. So there's only this one and that one that get a new child. Does it answer your question?
It depends on the degree,
On the value of I. So you just complete them as they want to be completed. Okay, so here are the blossom trees, which I claim correspond to the M Eulerian maps, and they can be counted easily. So now I want to construct a map from this, and the way this goes is as follows. So I will walk around the tree in counterclockwise order, and I will pay attention to the succession of buds and leaves that I meet. So for this tree, I meet, this is the root leaf, then a bud, a leaf, bud, leaf, leaf, bud, leaf, and so on. And what I do is that each time I meet a bud that is followed immediately by a leaf, I match them using adding a new edge. So adding edges will finally form a map. So let's do it here. So bud, leaf, then bud, leaf. So I match these two as well. Here they are. And then I go on. So I have a leaf, bud, leaf. So again, I match these two because they are consecutive. Then leaf, bud, leaf. They are matched here. I go on. Bud, leaf. Leaf, leaf, bud, leaf. And that's not over. So I am here, basically. Here again, this bud is followed by the root leaf, but I match them as any other pair of bud and leaf. Then I go on. So here, so these ones, I forget them, they are matched. I have a leaf, bud, leaf, which are matched in this picture. And there's one left, which is this one, and I match it to this leaf. Okay, and I cannot go further because I have exhausted the buds. So now, if you look at these blossom trees and count how many buds and leaves they contain, you will realize that we always have exactly M leaves that will match no bud. So in this case, you have them here. So that's three leaves. And we are not very far from having an M. Eulerian map. But still, in order to get something that is really bijective, we have to restrict the construction to some of the trees, not all of them. And the ones we consider are the so-called balanced ones. And they are defined very simply by saying that we want the root leaf to be unmatched. And so we match the edges, and then finally we add one last vertex of degree M, and we match it to the three unmatched leaves. And what we get at last is, because all the degrees have been preserved, is an M. Eulerian map. And the main result tells you that this is really a bijection between the balanced blossom trees, which we will have to count, and these maps. Okay, so the last step, which will be easy, is to count just these ones. We have seen that counting all blossom trees is fairly easy. It's just tree counting. So what about the balanced ones? And so this is where this idea of cyclic conjugacy of trees comes in. You just observe that if you take any blossom tree with its M unmatched leaves, and you decide to mark one of them. So the number of such marked trees is M times the number of blossom trees, which we know. And then you decide to grab the tree by this marked, unmatched leaf, and you shake it, and what you obtain is now a balanced tree, because the root leaf is unmatched, in which one of the leaves, which was formerly the root, is marked. And since you know how many leaves there are in such a tree, you really obtain a simple connection between the number of balanced trees and the number of blossom trees. And so this is the cycle lemma applied to trees, and so it gives you the formula. So here is the summary of the method. So at the heart of this result is this bijection between maps and balanced trees. Here you have number of trees, this cycle lemma, and so it gives the announced result on M Eulerian maps, and consequently on factorizations of permutations. Okay, and to conclude, I just want to mention, so this was not recent, but it has received a recent extension, again with Gilles Schaeffer. So what we have done is that we have counted all bicolored and bipartite maps by the degree distribution of all their vertices. That is, we've been able to compute or to characterize this very, very big generating function that takes into account how many white and black vertices of the degree I you have. So it has infinitely many variables, xi and yi. And so, yeah, the case we had before was a case where you had only vertices, black vertices of degree m, and the others had a degree that was a multiple of m, so this is really an extension, and it's also using the same kind of bijective construction. And so this has applications to the solution of some statistical physics models, namely the Ising model and the hard particle model, on planar maps, which is something that has been done for years in physics, and especially in a field called quantum gravity. I don't know anything about quantum gravity, except that, in my words, it boils down to solving physics models on planar maps rather than on regular lattices. And so, usually physicists solve these models using matrix integrals, and so this is a combinatorial version of this. And in particular, we have recovered and explained some results obtained on these two models, and especially the fact that one obtains algebraic generating functions for all these models, which combinatorially had to mean something and was not so clear using the matrix integral approach. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Any questions?
Non-minimal transitive factorization.
So you would like to consider somehow the next step, or?
Yeah.
So
where the surface is
Venus 1? Yeah. So we have no counterpart of this result. Well, there are, so if you think on the map side, with which I'm more familiar, there are some results, of course, on the enumeration of maps of a given genus. It's not so much refined. Here we have been able really to say, to keep track of the degree of some of the vertices, but you have results on the generating function of maps of genus 1 counted by the number of edges and vertices also.
Does this technology with trees and all let you actually compute Hurwitz numbers when the conjugacy classes of factors that are fixed?
Not yet, but I'm...
So you can recover the...
Yes. Well, who bits will? Yeah, so we recover these results by taking... Yeah.
What about three cycles and five cycles?
Right. I don't know.
All Aegina Zero results, the general Aegina G results which you're asking about.
Oh, no, he's asking about...
The arbitrary...
Like coverings of the sphere, you know, 3 points, three sheets and five sheets.
So far, no. So it can be translated, of course, in terms of maps. So if you fix the cycle structure of some of the factors, it means fixing the sizes of the corresponding faces in the map. But you see in our construction, when we close edges, it's very hard to keep track of the degree of the faces. So,
for those of us who don't know, can you explain that? What's the connection between your maps and the branch covers?
Okay, so if you take... the connection is between these maps and branched covers of the sphere by itself. And the idea is that if you have a function with, say, m plus 1 critical values...
I have an m sheet of cover. You're looking at
of the sheet? Yeah. I have m plus 1 critical values, and so it's not m sheeted. The degree would be n, I think.
Oh, okay.
And so if you draw in the...
m plus 1 points?
Right.
Yeah.
N sheets.
And if you take the pre-image of some polygon or some star visiting all these m plus 1 critical values, what you get is, well, actually the dual of m Eulerian map. So you could have your m... So there are m critical values for which we do not fix the branching type, and say you join them by a cycle, and you have an m plus 1th critical value of which you fix the cycle type. And then you take the pre-image by a function of this, and what you get is what we call a planar constellation, which is exactly the dual of m Eulerian maps. It's explained in the paper, actually. Yeah?
So this result is kind of great. Geometrically, you're extremely sort of remarkable in providing a nice performance of this. So I have a question, but first of a remark, that there's a... So the motivation for increasing the genus is that there's this amazing formula of economic Shapiro of Einstein, which says that in just the old-fashioned Hermit's case, there's this polynomiality structure to these numbers, which is combinatorially and geometrically surprising, and the coefficients have algebra geometric meaning.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, in higher genus, even just genus 1 would be... Well, genus 0 is already interesting, but that's Begg's question, genus 1 and higher. That is, you take these numbers, put them in a generating function in a natural way, there should be some polynomial behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So far as
I know, nothing of this type has been done for higher genus, well, except this solution by Baudelas for the number of one vertex maps having a given number of edges and a given genus. So that was Haher and Zagier's result, which has now been given a combinatorial explanation, which is nice.
Is there some chance that you could, that it has been done so far, is there a prospect for what you're doing?
So in the case of genus 1, and for some MAPS models, we have some formulae that come from matrix integrals, which were given to us by some physicists in Sackley. And so one could try really to stick to this formula to understand which structures... I mean, you have trees behind, but how to arrange them to form something that has genus 1 is, of course, the thing one has to understand. So that's something we'd like to do, but...
but in genus 1, there is a nice answer with all the factors of transposition.
Oh.
arbitrary genus is in that sense sort of by this formula, but not in this much more general situation.
Okay. So which formula was it you mentioned? The
Ekedal and Shapiro invasion.
Okay.
I can give you more precise support.
Okay, yeah. It's a bit elliptic.
So, are there any further questions? So, I'm going to thank this morning's speakers.